You might think of the suburbs as places where the middle class or people with even more means live to escape the city and urban poverty. But in fact, the suburbs are now the epicenter of poverty in America. Elizabeth Kneebone is the author of Confronting Suburban Poverty in America and is a fellow at the Brookings Institution. She joins us from KQED in San Francisco. Elizabeth, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And we're also joined by Maria Gomez, president and CEO of Mary Center. That's a health and social services agency based in the Washington, D.C. area. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
And Elizabeth, let me start with you. How much poverty are we seeing in the suburbs today compared with, say, 10 years ago?
So we've seen actually really rapid growth and spread of poverty in suburbs in our major metro areas since 2000. Between 2000 and 2013, the number of poor living in suburbs grew by about 66%.
And is that just because of gentrification?
No, that's not enough to explain the sort of magnitude and pace of growth that we've seen in these communities. There are a lot of different factors that have worked together over several years to drive the poverty numbers up to what we're seeing today. Broadly speaking, there are more poor residents in suburbs because of two reasons. One, more poor residents have moved to suburban communities. And the other is that more residents who've lived in suburbs for longer have become poor over time. So it's a combination of those factors that are affected by things like where affordable housing is located within region, where jobs are located, and of course the impact of cycles in the regional economy over time have helped to shape these numbers.
And the national economy, I assume that the housing crash caused a lot of people to be poorer than they otherwise would have been if their house price declined and they were unable to sell and move to where they might be able to get a higher paying job. That would have caused more of this problem.
Well, yeah, and we've seen, you know, over time, this rise in poverty has been playing out over decades, even before the collapse of the housing market. But the recession and the impact of the housing market collapse really pushed fast forward on these trends. When we look across the 100 largest metros in the country, about three quarters of the subprime loans that happened in the mid-2000s in those regions happened in suburban communities. And since the housing market collapsed, about three quarters of foreclosures have been in suburbs.
So let's bring in Maria Gomez, who deals with this on a daily basis. She's president and CEO of Mary Center, a health and social services agency based in the Washington, D.C. area. And Maria, we should say your organization was based in D.C., then you moved to Montgomery County outside of D.C., and then to Prince George's County.
Right. And what we did is we followed our clients. We saw that our clients were being displaced from the District of Columbia, primarily because of housing. Some of the jobs were related to that, too. And families who also wanted a better education for their children. So we now have a good over 40% of our almost close to 40,000 clients live in the suburbs now.
And what are the biggest challenges for those people, for people who are poor and living in the suburbs? What services do they need?
Well, the problem I think that we see is that, you know, in the cities, there was a concentrated in because it's the city is accessible, anywhere in the city, any agency is accessible. There was also an infrastructure in the city with social service agencies, with health care, child care, education, all those jobs were accessible. But the social service infrastructure was pretty solid in the District of Columbia. What we saw with people started moving in the suburbs, primarily to afford housing, is that now the social services are very few, and those that are there are very far apart from where people live. And we're seeing that people are now falling again into the same. While they move to have a little bit of housing, they're spending a lot of their money more on health care, more on transportation, in child care, and they're living, many of them living farther away from jobs. And so it's a big problem.
And if they need those social services that existed in the city and don't exist to the same degree in the suburbs, do they travel into the city for those services or do they just go without?
For many of them, they go without, but many do travel into the city. That is one of the reasons why we moved with our community into the suburbs to try to bring some of the health and social services into that area. But unfortunately for healthcare, particularly in Prince George's County, for instance, there is no safety net for health care. So even though we have the Affordable Care Act, we still have in Prince George's County, 62% of the people that we see there are still uninsured.
Elizabeth, is this something that we're seeing in other cities around the country? We think of D.C. as a very good example of this because the prices have risen dramatically and a lot of the poor population has moved into the suburbs. But is this happening all around the country?
Yes, almost every major metro area has seen their suburban poor population grow, particularly in the 2000s. And this is happening in all kinds of communities, you know, older inner ring suburban places and also, you know, outlying exurban communities or more affluent communities that people often think of as immune to these trends. And many of the challenges that Maria are outlining are shared challenges across these communities. The lack of social service infrastructure, the lack of public transit infrastructure that can make it even more challenging to connect to jobs and to, you know, much needed services.
So what can be done about this?
Well, I think Maria's organization is a great example of strong providers in the city or in one part of the region being able to expand and build their capacity to meet the growing need elsewhere, creating, you know, a more effective scale of services to address needs across jurisdictional boundaries.
I think another one that I see is that in the suburbs, there's still an opportunity, unlike, let's say, in a city like the District of Columbia, that there's still an opportunity to have and plan for affordable housing, right? So it's across the spectrum, right? So it's not just for the most poor, the strictly poor or very poor individuals, but it's also the middle class, you know, lower middle class who are also, you know, losing the ability to afford the rental, the ability to have that dream of owning their own home. So one of the things that we can do in the suburbs is to really, really plan communities so that we're not creating what happened in many cities decades ago, which is creating these communities where only poor people live. You know, I'm a great example of living in a community, growing up in a community where there was a diversified group of people of all income levels, so that I saw, you know, my neighbor who went to college. While my parents didn't go to college, I saw, you know, and lived in neighborhoods where I saw kids go to college, where I inspired, you know, while my parents inspired me to do that, my mom inspired me to do that, my neighbors also inspired me to do that. So communities that are diversified in income, in communities that where everybody has hope and has a voice and is incentivized to be civically engaged. And that doesn't happen when you build communities and you're just dumping all poverty, if I can excuse my say the word, you know, place, because that's what we're doing in many ways, is literally dumping our poor people into one area and making sure that they have no alternatives to move up that economic scale.
Maria Gomez, president and CEO of Mary's Center. That's a health, social services, and education agency based in the Washington, D.C. area. And we've also been speaking with Elizabeth Kneebone, author of Confronting Suburban Poverty in America, and she's also at the Brookings Institution. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, well, on this election day, we've got a program note for you. NPR News will be covering the election results tonight. Stay tuned for the latest on the Senate races around the country, the governor's races, the congressional races, the ballot questions. Robert Siegel and Melissa Block will be there with analysts and reporters all around the country, and we will be right back here tomorrow with the results and analysis. Here and Now is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service. I'm Jeremy Hobson.
I'm Robin Young. This is Here and Now.